Greetings, everybody. You are listening to the Trailblazers.com podcast, a little special edition today. Not only do we have Dave Deckard, BlazersEdge.com, in studio, but we also have Dwight Janes, Morning Sports Page, Talkin' Ball, and DwightJanes.com, also in studio. So we've got a three-man studio going today, which is always nice to be able to see people and talk to them rather than listening on the radio. So, fellows, how are you doing? Dwight, I'll start with you. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, Casey, it's my pleasure. It's great to be on with you two guys. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the intelligence quotient around here just went up exponentially.
When you walked in, not when I walked
yeah,
in.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was me. No one's going to confuse me for any kind of genius, be it in basketball or anything else.
So. You're just podcasting for your looks.
Exactly, you know what I mean? Yeah. I've got a face for podcasting, my dad tells me. So we're going to talk a little Trailblazers for the next half hour, 45 minutes or so. Maybe kind of go over the quote-unquote game that happened last night at the Rose Garden. Talk about this upcoming road trip and really just a stretch of games coming up here that probably maybe the toughest stretch maybe of the season for the Trailblazers, even though a lot of the games are at home, a lot of tough teams. The Rose Garden winning magic or whatever you want to call it hasn't seemed to have been the same lately. So a lot of stuff going on, kind of a difficult portion of the season here.
It's not the toughest stretch on paper, maybe. They've been through some tougher ones and fared better. But it's certainly, I think, the toughest stretch emotionally. It's going to be a gut check for this team to see if they can even win two of the next four. One would be about average, and zero is certainly possible. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night. Since the Roy Aldridge era has started, this team has never faced that kind of adversity. They've lost games, but they've not had, in the high expectation era, 2, 3, 4 weeks that just went in the tank. And it will be interesting to see, because even the smaller things that have gone wrong, particularly this season, seem to have elicited maybe chemistry issues, complaining issues, some fracturing. This could be a big thing in their experience going wrong, and I'm interested to see how they'll handle it.
I think that's a good point, Dave. You talk about bad stretches and everything. Anything has to be tempered by the fact that Brandon Roy isn't playing. And when he's not playing, I'm afraid you're ticketed for some bad stretches. And it's very difficult. They've gotten along without other people as long as Brandon is there. But this one is especially tough, I think. And it's magnified even more when a team like Utah comes to town that scouts well, prepares well, and also is so disciplined in what they do on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, last night, especially in that first quarter, I mean, we saw a Jazz team that was just playing top-notch ball. And, I mean, the Blazers had trouble in the first quarter against the Hornets as well, kind of the same thing, really getting into the post. But the Jazz, I mean, took what the Hornets did and then multiplied it by 10. I mean, they looked like world beaters last night. They were just playing hot potato out there for a while and really, you know, making the Blazers defense and interior defense in general look pretty silly. And it's tough to see. It was nice to see the Blazers, you know, make the, as Dave put it, the obligatory comeback, at least partially there. But you never, I don't know personally, I never really got the feeling that there was really a chance we were going to win that game last night.
I think we're agreed on that.
Yeah, no shot.
Yeah.
And you know what, though? It is partially the Jazz because they're well coached and they're, you know, an experienced team. They've gone to the Western Conference Finals. But it's not going to be just the Jazz, and it's not going to be just last night. The Blazers are going to start facing teams that have a vested interest in beating them. Division rivals, conference rivals, good teams in the West. They're not going to mess around anymore. It's almost like even in this day and age in the NBA, anything that happens before Christmas kind of doesn't matter. There's a little hangover of that into the new year. But we are going to start seeing the playoff run amp up here. And you've got teams like Memphis now, Oklahoma City, who think they have a chance. They're behind us. Phoenix has been there. Of course, there's Utah, there's Dallas, there's San Antonio, there's Houston, let alone the Lakers. So you're going to face every night now someone who has the tools to beat you and the motivation to beat you, and they're going to have looked at that scouting report for 3 months now and seen Juwan Howard in the middle. And, not to knock Juwan, he's been doing a great job, but they, Howard, Pendergraph, Aldridge, this doesn't inspire confidence in your paint defense, and they're going to be ready for that.
Well, it's so frequent, too, with a guy like Pendergraph, who when we saw early in situations where he wasn't a main guy, where he wasn't a starter, where he wasn't a key reserve, teams really weren't ready for what he brought. And now that he's playing significant minutes, people are looking at him and say, okay, what can we do with Jeff Pendergraft? Now, this isn't to say at some point he won't be able to deal with whatever they bring. He's a rookie. And to expect much from him is way too much. Right now, he's a foul machine, and they're coming in, and they're just – whenever he comes on the floor, they're attacking him. They're going right at him, and they're getting a foul a very high percentage of the time. I haven't gone to Synergy and looked it up or anything like that, but whenever they go after him, he either fouls or they score.
Yeah, I mean – Jeff is kind of in there to provide, you know, quote-unquote toughness.
And he does that.
And he does. But also, I mean, the other side of that is, especially as a rookie, I mean, you pick up fouls. And that's basically what he's doing. And, you know, he's still – you know, he told me the other day that, you know, every day for him, you know, he's always playing against someone who's better than he is. And, you know, and he realizes that. And he's trying to learn every day. But, you know, he's come in having missed the first part of the season, having missed training camp, which probably doesn't help him a whole lot. And, you know, he's being thrown into a situation where – I mean, no one would have expected him to be playing probably any minutes period this season, let alone significant minutes, and having to play some kind of role off the bench. And right now, yeah, for Jeff, it's a trial by fire, and it's hard going for him.
And if it were just Jeff, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But okay, you could tell that story about Dante Cunningham. You can tell that story about Jared Bayless to some extent.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we saw those amazing outputs from Bayless last month. And you know, I was saying, look, hold on, this isn't real yet.
Yep.
And the league figured out, sit on his right hand, make him shoot jumpers.
Don't foul him too. Don't bail him out.
Yeah, don't foul him on his way. Wait till he gets to the hoop. He's going to put that shot up, probably. Just wait till it leaves his hands and swat it away because he's releasing low. And look, they've got him. I mean, not that he hasn't compensated. He's had a few assists in some games, and he's done a fine job. He's doing exactly what he needs to be doing. No knock on Bayless. He's doing great. But he's in that situation above his head.
He's not going to go out and get 31 for Brandon every night now.
No.
He's not going to do that.
Yeah, right. He's still second-year player, Jared Bayless. Yeah. I mean, a couple starts and a couple really nice games aren't going to change, you know, that he's still a young player who, like you said, has been scouted now. And, I mean, you know, Jared probably, as he would probably admit, needs to diversify his game a little bit. I mean, even on breaks, you know, if Jared's got the ball, you know, he's probably not going to pass it off to anyone. So either you sit and wait for that offensive foul, or you just wait till he kind of goes up off balance and make a play then. So, you know, everyone is kind of learning on the fly right now, which would be okay if we weren't, like Dave said, in January and really having to try to fight to make the playoffs, and if we weren't without our best player right now as well, which, I mean, everything, I guess, you kind of look at through the prism of, boy, it'd be nice to have Brandon Roy right now. But even so, you know, there are things that this team could be doing that maybe they're not doing right now without Brandon Roy, and, you know, they need to maybe figure out what those things are and get back to doing those things.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure last night Brandon would have helped much. Mm-hmm. The way Utah executed, the only guy who would have helped last night was a healthy Greg Oden, I think would have shored up the interior defense enough that it might have made a difference. But that was surgical last night. Yeah. I mean, they just carved him up. And really, the only thing that made the game close, in my opinion, was in the third quarter. Carlos Boozer got hurt and left the game at the exact same time. Darren Williams drew his fourth foul. He left the game. So you're taking the two most effective players at that point off the floor. That changed the game a little bit. But even then, when the game got close late, Utah thought, okay – and they went back to really being precise in the half court, and they're dunking the ball again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you know, which brings up something that was discussed on the morning sports page this morning with Dwight and Gavin Dawson and CIP, which was Boozer versus Aldridge. Mm-hmm. And your assessment of that matchup wasn't very favorable toward LaMarcus. Huh?
I thought it was a good thing for LaMarcus that Boozer got hurt, because if he'd have stayed in the game through the end of the game, he might have by then picked LaMarcus up and taken him over the steel bridge and dropped him off the bridge, because I thought he was manhandling LaMarcus last night. It was just now once he left and LaMarcus turned around and felt on the post, hey, wait a minute, is that Mehmet Okur trying to guard me? Is this a kind of soft white guy trying to guard me? Now that ain't going to work. He took him hard to the basket and really worked him over. But he couldn't do that with Boozer. Boozer was really tall, long. and tough against him. And that's the kind of interior defense LaMarcus doesn't often see. But he, Boozer, you know, he's playing for a contract. And man, he was good last night.
He was great last night. And I think that's pretty much the scouting report on LaMarcus. If you can really get into him and push him out, you know, if he doesn't get assertive and try to get back at you, then you really take him out of his game. And we saw it last night. I mean, Boozer had that arm on him, and every time LaMarcus would try to move, nothing doing. And then any time where LaMarcus couldn't even get in position, they'd bring that double, yeah. And LaMarcus would have to pass out right away, and they wouldn't repost. And, you know, LaMarcus's line last night looked all right. I think he had like 21 or 22 points and 9 rebounds. But
25 and 9. Casey, he's the master of that, though. He's an amazing guy that you'll watch the game, and we'll be sitting up there talking, you know, where we sit, and we'll say, geez, LaMarcus wasn't very good tonight. You look at the stat sheet. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
He had 24 and 11, or he had 24 and 9 or something. It's like, wait a minute. It didn't seem like it, but he gets the stats. He does.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in some respects that's good, I guess.
It is.
I mean, yeah. You know, I guess it's good if someone else did. It's not bad to have quiet point productions.
Well,
but
maybe it means we're being too critical of them, too. I don't know. It's possible that we're, you know, maybe we're too critical because we're looking for something that he's never going to provide, you know, that element.
Yeah, absolutely.
He may not be that guy.
Well, and I don't think he is. And you know, Nate even talked about last night the quote-unquote new power forward in the league who, you know, was more of a jump shooter. And that's what LaMarcus is. But, you know, most people grew up watching, you know, Karl Malone and you know, those guys who are really
Buck Williams.
Buck Williams, pick and roll type point guards who not pick and pop point guards, which is kind of what LaMarcus is. And, you know, when we see that, it's always kind of a head scratcher, I think, because you're used to seeing something that you've seen your whole life that seemed to work. And, you know, it's different now.
I don't mind the shot. Okay. I don't mind LaMarcus taking a jumper because he's
either.
Good at it.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a couple issues with LaMarcus. One is it doesn't look like his offensive game, anyway, has developed much between last year and this, and maybe it's regressed a little. He's fading away, seemingly, on a lot more things. He's being bothered by double teams, which at this point in his career, I mean, he shouldn't have mastered yet, but we should still be seeing progress. And it feels like we still have last year's LaMarcus, and his growth is not done. Number two, I feel like LaMarcus really lets too much of the game come to him instead of reaching out and taking it. And the great players, even the number two players, you know, all have that ability to step up. I mean, the difference between a number one and a number two option on a team is not necessarily talent or, you know, even drive, but the fact that the number one player gets it all the time, the number two player has to pick and choose. And the skill is knowing when to step up and grab the game and say, this is my time. LaMarcus, you don't see that. It's all kind of, you know, what shots I get, I'm going to pass up some of them. You don't see him demanding the ball. You don't see him establishing position aggressively. You don't see that fire in him to be what this team needs and everything he can be right now. And I think people are aching for that.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I mean, you can see in beginning of games and in the start of the third quarter, they go to LaMarcus first two, three plays
yeah.
right off the bat.
Oh, always. They're trying
always.
To establish
I mean, that's,
him.
That's what yeah. they do. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But even when it doesn't work, you would think you still keep doing it, especially with Brandon out, because, I mean, you look around and there's not a whole lot of guys who can really, you know, assert themselves on offense, at least not when there's someone to take the pressure off them.
Well, that's true. And also in pro sports, you can't really ignore this, and fans sometimes do. There is a pecking order in sports. And very often in sports, that pecking order is based on how much money you make. Now, it shouldn't be all the time. But let's face it, some guys are paid the money, and with that money comes responsibility to deliver. Now, some guys don't like the pressure of that, and I say to them, okay, then don't take the money. But you're taking the money. You're the second highest paid guy on any team. Let's just not talk about LaMarcus Aldridge and the Trailblazers.
Yeah.
When you're making that kind of dough, you got to be that kind of player. And people expect the pecking order to have something to do with how much a guy's getting. Now, say a Greg Oden, he becomes a max guy. He won't be expected to score max type money, but at the other end of the floor, you better be a max player there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think in pro sports, baseball, football, basketball, they're all that way. When you get the bucks, with that comes a certain responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, the number one option on this team when it gets under pressure is Andre Miller.
Yeah,
I mean, he's gonna he's gonna take the ball, and part of it is he's the vet; he knows what to do with it. Part of it is he's the point guard and control that. Part of it is his nature. But there's, it's incumbent upon LaMarcus a little bit, I think, to stand up and say no, or at least you don't get to be the clear number one. That this is mine too. You just stepped in here, and you get the ball to me. When I'm done with it, you make your move.
Well, yeah. I agree. I think part of it is systemic, though, too, in a sense that on this team, they do a lot more clear outs, ISOs, one-on-one, and then just extreme isolated pick-and-roll situations where the ball necessarily doesn't always find its way to LaMarcus Aldridge. They're so accustomed to Brandon taking over these games that other players, you know, it's like they tried the other night. Okay, let's run the same ISOs for Andre, or let's run those same things for Jared that we run for Brandon Roy. Well, unfortunately, those guys aren't Brandon Roy, and they can't necessarily make those things work. And that's why having a structure the way Utah has, the way Houston has, the way the Lakers have, where your system provides offensive opportunities for other players, this is the type of situation where those systems really help your team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and Nate has said that, you know, they're running the same sets for Jared right now that they would run for Brandon, and I mean,
that's tough.
They're not the same player. It's,
no,
it's
and that's tough
Jared.
For
yeah,
Jared.
Absolutely.
I mean, because Brandon does an awful lot of that stuff on his own. I mean, that's just Brandon Roy talent. That's not, you know, anything they're especially designing on paper. Where you see Utah gets baskets that are, that's stuff Jerry Sloan drew up on the grease board, you know, at halftime. Those are plays, you know, and a lot of action away from the ball, a lot of down screens, backdoor picks, back cuts, all the things that they do that get you baskets without one guy having to work his tail off to beat two people to the basket.
And the Blazers run some of that stuff, but part of what Brandon Roy has developed in since his rookie season is the ability to get other people involved in the flow of that, even when he has the ball. Jared Bayless doesn't have that. Andre Miller has some of it, but he is not the same offensive threat that puts pressure on the defense to draw people away to make those passes easy.
Well, that's exactly the point, Dave. To do that, you have to demand the double team. You've got to command other teams to run that extra guy. Brandon commands triple teams. Yeah. Two sometimes aren't enough, but they're sometimes willing to commit three people. If he's on his way to the basket, they'll surround him, fence him in. That's where he sets players up for open threes. That's what he does. They don't really have anybody else that can get that kind of attention from the defense.
Yeah. Right. And look who's wilting. LaMarcus a little bit. Rudy Fernandez. I mean, just a shadow of what he was. Now, he's more active, I think, defensively than he was.
He is.
I think he's more active rebounding. But in the offense, I mean, last year, how many times did you see him cut to the hoop, receive the pass, and dunk it? How many times have you seen that this year? Just
once.
About, zero, maybe once. Right. You know, Martell Webster has streaks where he goes when he's always been that way, but he needs to be set up and it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just really becomes a very guard-centric offense when it's not going well. And it's okay if you got Brandon to bail you out of that, but without him, that guard-centric offense becomes a liability.
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, all of these things are completely valid and true, and it really comes down to the point that, you know, when you're missing your best player, your team doesn't run the same way. And
absolutely.
I mean, just like you said with Boozer and Williams going out last night, I mean, when those guys went out, Blazers made a run.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys come back in, you know, game over. So, I mean, it gets to a point where, yeah, you can – I mean, you look at the situation, and there's definitely things that need to be fixed and changed, but, I mean – none of it's going to fix itself basically without Brandon Roy in there. And that's, I mean, that's just a fact of the matter.
And this, don't you think, Casey, too, this was overdue? I mean, really, they've been running on fumes now for a month.
Yeah,
and everybody, I mean, Dave's been predicting it for weeks, really, on his blog. And that is, if, you know, and people get mad. They say, oh, you're being Mr. Won't you ever understand? This is what, no, wait a minute, folks. There's an inevitability here at work. Inevitably, you know, these gutty little guys that we're all pulling for, you know, how long can you expect them to hold the fort?
Yeah.
I mean, they're undermanned. They're undermanned up front, something awful. They can't defend the post. They can't, you know, it's really hard for them inside to do anything. And face it, the perimeter defense all year here, in fact, for the last couple of years, hasn't been great. So now you get penetration combined with the fact that you got people inside you can't handle. That's really tough to win games, especially now. They're going to be playing division rivals, conference rivals. These are tough games that teams are ready for.
Yeah, teams that can throw size at the Blazers, like the Jazz can. It's, I mean, they're going to have to play their absolute best game to stick in it, because, I mean, you, as we saw last night, and even with, you know, the Hornets with Emeka Okafor and David West, two guys. I mean, Okafor's all right in the post. He's a nice little post player. David West doesn't operate a ton in the post, but, you know, enough. We saw those guys have big games because there's, I mean, it's just hard to throw enough size and manpower and know-how at those guys at this point.
Yeah, and teams that can throw speed at the Blazers create a problem. Teams that can shoot create a problem. We've crossed that invisible line from it depends on how the Blazers do, whether they win this game, to really, it depends on how the opponent does.
Great point, Dave.
And
see,
that's
I'm not as concerned about speed or shooting, because I feel like those are things that I mean, you can mask and you can help with. But for me, it's size on this team right now. There's just, I mean, I don't know what you would do to stop the Utah Jazz last night. I mean, teams that have that size, or the Clippers for that matter, teams that have a lot of post presence.
Well, and what makes that worse and what compounds the problem is that's really what's always been a strength here.
Yeah.
People said this is the team that can compete with the Lakers because they're the only team in the West big enough and long enough. When everybody's healthy, they're big enough to stand up to the Lakers. Well, then you lose what was one of your big advantages, which pays off defensively, pays off on the boards, it pays off all across the board, really. Now all of a sudden you don't have it. It hurts even more.
Absolutely.
Probably the best way to put it is there's some amazing work that's been done here, shown by the fact that this isn't a lottery team already right now. I mean, when you step back and look, it's hard when you go game to game because each game is a microcosm and its own isolated event that you expect and hope to win. But if you look at the long-term effect, I mean, if you look at who they're playing, it's amazing that they aren't already the 10th, 11th, 12th team in the conference. And, you know, some serious props to the guys who have been playing that they have won the amount they have.
Yeah, it's been hard. But kind of one of the bright spots maybe from last night, obviously, Nicholas Batum in his second game back really had maybe one of his better games as a pro, period. And you know, limited minutes. I think he went 6 for 9, 16 points. Played some decent defense on Deron Williams, you know, not in there really long enough to really, I think, get in that defensive groove, but steadily bumping his minutes up a little bit. And he's looking right now, and I think he looks great right now, and I'm really just hoping and crossing my fingers that he's not going to have a lull here in another week or two when kind of it starts to catch up to him. And also, too, I'm wondering, and I'd like to get both of your opinion on this, is it a matter right now that Nicholas is playing well because of teams just aren't accustomed to seeing him again? Or, I mean, does that scouting carry over from last year, you think? Because it's not like Nicholas is an unknown quantity. He did improve some of his skills, particularly his outside shooting in the offseason. But it seems like, at least in that last game, against a good defensive team in the Jazz, he was making shots and getting to the rim, you know, fairly easily.
Well, what I see so far, Casey, is a confidence level in him that I don't know that I saw last year. Not only in shooting the ball from the corners, which he did pretty well last year, but putting the ball on the floor. All of a sudden, you have a guy who's willing to rebound the ball to defensive end, go coast to coast, and finger roll at the other end. I mean, this is a little different Nicholas Batum than we've seen before. And honestly, with the way he defends, and it's look, I guess I specialize in overreacting when you do a blog and you write every day. And then, unfortunately, with blogs, a guy can just scroll down the page, as you know, and see the things you've written like 3 weeks ago, and they look like idiocy. But anyway, we do overreact. I'm going to overreact, okay, because what I'm telling you is in the 10 minutes he played the other night and then the first half he played tonight – or the first half last night when he went 7 for 7 from the floor and was making plays all over the place at both ends. He was Pippen-esque, if I might use the term. He was Pippen-esque. Now, am I saying he's the next Scottie Pippen? No, I'm not. But it's been a while since we've had a player here who had the ability to make plays at the defensive end and the offensive end and make it look as easy as that kid makes it look. He makes things look easy.
Yeah.
In fact, he makes them look easier than Scottie did. Scottie did those things, but with Scottie, there was effort there. This kid is effortless in the way he plays. I love his temperament on the floor. He's not high and low. He's just even keel. There's so much about him to like that him back now gives Blazer fans one more really great reason to watch games. He is a guy to watch. You can't take your eyes off him. I find myself in the press area thinking, put him in, put him in, put him in, because that's a guy I want to watch. That's the way Odin was for me. Mm-hmm. Put him. I want to see this guy. More, more, more. Give me more. I'm the same way with Nick Batum. Give me more Batum. I want to see this guy play because he's that kind of a sort of riveting, charismatic kind of player. I think there's great potential there. I hope. You know, and again, I'm overreacting. I admit it, okay?
I don't think you are, actually, no. Entirely. I mean, the Pippen comparison, I don't know. You know, who knows that Pippen's a Hall of Famer, but...
Exactly. No, but that kind of
right,
impact.
But, you know, from the day he took over from Martell Webster, this kid has been special. And this kid doesn't have many lulls because he does it so much on the defensive end and in the spaces in between that last year his offense was almost a bonus, you know. But last year he spent all game in the corner kind of being the quiet church mouse waiting to get past you so he could shoot a three. What he's shown in the last two games offensively has been a dramatic change. I mean, you always knew he could fly, but now he's flying like with a purpose, and that's amazing. And you know, on average, even if he doesn't have 7 for 7 halves, on average he is going to do very, very well with that kind of attack.
Yeah, the fluidity of Nicholas Batum is just, I mean, I don't recall another player in Portland. Yeah, since like you said, I mean Scottie had that ability, but he wasn't fluid. Like, Nick is just so smooth. I mean, yeah, like, everything about him personally and on the court, he's just a smooth cat, you know? And I mean, one of the things I'm really looking forward to is seeing Brandon and Nicholas on the floor again together, because I think those two create kind of a duo in the backcourt, even though Nicholas is small forward. But, I mean, they allow the Trailblazers, I think, to play a different way, particularly on the defensive end. You take a little pressure off Brandon, and also you have another guy who can really who can get his own shot and who can, you know, be that kind of athletic force kind of in that perimeter and in the post. He was going to go ahead and rebound. We don't have really anyone who really goes in and tries to get that rebound. I mean, if they get long rebounds, and that's great, but they don't have someone who's really going out there sniffing for him, and that's Nicholas.
Like that put-back slam that he had last night over the top of somebody.
Yeah.
See, those are the kind of plays, Casey. You know, I don't overreact to guys going out and going 7 for 7.5, okay?
Right.
And not that it wasn't great, and I love shooters. I love players who can shoot. I'm always biased against shooters, but anybody can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you and me can go out in a half on the playground and maybe hit 7 shots in a row on the greatest day we ever had. I mean, that's possible. But it's the other things he does that if you see him do that dunk that he put back in last night, if you see him do that once, then you know he has the skills to do something that a bunch of other guys don't have the skills to do. You see that one time and you think, this guy could be special. I'm not saying he is special. He could be special. You see him guarding a point guard last night. Now, did Deron Williams beat him off the dribble? Yeah, he did. He beat everybody else, too.
Yeah,
but Nick Batum did as good a job as anybody. And let's not forget, this is a 6'8 small forward who can guard three positions now and get in passing lanes, rebound the ball, block a shot, make a pass. He does a lot of different things that give you reason to believe this guy could be a very good all-around player.
Absolutely. And the thing I love about Nicholas too is Nicholas is going out there to try to make plays on you. I mean, he wants to dunk on you. He wants to block you on the fast break. I mean, he's got that swagger and just
he's
that,
French. Come
yeah,
on.
Exactly. He's French. Yeah, he wants to show it off. You know, that's
right.
Great. That's what this team needs. This team needs guys that. I mean, it's nice to have laid back guys like Brandon who are going to be quiet and professional and do what they do. But it's nice to have that guy out there who's like, you know what. I want to make you look foolish tonight. You know, that's what I'm going out to do as well as helping my team. That's what Nicholas Batum brings you. I love it.
I want to go back to something Dwight said a couple minutes ago because I know people listen to this in part to find out about the game, you know, from people who've watched mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And what Dwight said about how to identify players is one of the easy methods you can use to figure out who's good on your team. Who do you notice? And I don't just mean when they're scoring. Who do you notice out there that you can't take your eyes off of? Scouts even do this. General managers do the same thing. They'll go to watch one guy, and then they'll notice another, and that's how people get drafted, right? Who's it been this year? It was Oden when he was playing. It's always Roy, which is why he is mm-hmm. who he is. And Batum, I mean, last night especially. Guys you don't notice so much. LaMarcus, Martell most times, Bayless intermittently, and that's the issue. Is Bayless going to become an always notice him guy or once every six games, right? The biggest change that I think we've seen this year has been Rudy. Last year, you could barely take your eyes off the guy, right or wrong. I mean, he made a lot of mistakes, but he was doing something with those. This year, he's not making as many mistakes, but he's not Rudy out there. And I'm wondering, what is this? Is this the injury? Is this because word seems to have gotten around about him that if you take his head off, he's going to fade? Because every team is doing it, and he's struggling. Is it simply he's not used to the players he's playing with, or has he come back down to earth? I mean, what's going on with this guy?
I think it's probably more that he's the guys like Andre Miller, Jared Bayless, guys who in theory would be responsible with getting him the ball when he's making his cuts. They're just not accustomed to playing with him, like Sergio was. I mean, those two, I mean, if Rudy makes eye contact with Andre Miller out there, Andre Miller's like, what are you looking at me for? You know, when he makes eye contact with Sergio, he knows it's like, hey, get it up there for me. So, I mean, I think a lot of it's that. I mean, I think he is working himself back into shape. And a lot of teams are going at Rudy, but I feel like Rudy doesn't fade that much when he gets hit. He just is still Rudy, I mean, I don't feel like he fades as much as he's just, he's not in the flow, as you said, Dave.
Well, Casey, I think you make a great point about the guy he's playing with. I think more than anybody on the team, maybe, that Rudy is really dependent upon people looking for him in the mm-hmm. right spots and getting the ball to him at the right spots. He's not a guy that will take the ball and go get what he needs to get. He just doesn't seem like that kind of player. I'll also say he is getting hit a ton, and he's responding in a manner that's going to get him a red card one of these days. He's flopping around like a European soccer player. Every time he takes a hit, his arms go flailing, and I mean, he goes flying. He reminds me, Kerry Eggers brought it up last night. He said, I think we're looking at a skinny Sabonis. Here's Sabonis on the floor, and I don't know if you remember, but he had that whole European flopper thing down. The guy weighs 300 pounds, and he'd take a blow from a 6-foot point guard, and he'd be flopping all over the – oh, geez, oh, man. Arms flailing in the air and all that. And it works most of the time. Yeah. You do get the call.
I see a lot of guys on the team doing it, actually. I mean, a lot of guys in the league in general doing it.
Yeah.
Which
– Derek Fisher's made a career out of flopping.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's particularly good for the game, but no. I think it's kind of the – it's a situation we find ourselves in right now where –
it's the way the game's called.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's more theatrics now than anything else.
This brings up an interesting point to me. I mean, the game has changed. I mean,
a lot.
In the way it's enforced, in the what people are allowed to do. I don't think it's a good thing necessarily.
No. Yeah.
I mean, within limits, players should be able to take care of what happens on the court the same way they do in baseball. And then people wring their hands about, getting beaned and stuff like that. Forget that. Okay, that's part of the game. If someone pulls Rudy out of the sky and turns him upside down, someone should be able to go after that guy and clock him without there being one game suspension. Okay, you know, I buy that. But let them take care of the business out there and establish who's going to dominate. Because what you got now is you got a bunch of sneaky, underhanded crap that goes on that's generally allowed from star players or you know, certain big guys that nobody can respond to or stop, and it's garbage. I remember one of the defining moments of the Drexler-era Blazers was a game in L.A. versus the Clippers, and I believe it was Kenny Norman, although don't quote me on that. Huge guy. Squared off with Jerome Kersey. Ken Bannister, there we go, was squared off with him. I mean, and he had 2 inches and probably 50 pounds on Jerome, okay? Jerome's jab went so quick that it was a blur, and this guy was on his butt and shaking his head, wondering what happened. Jerome got a suspension, but he came back. It didn't affect his career at all. No one messed with Clyde, Terry, anybody again, because they knew that Jerome and Buck were going to ring him up. Where is that in today's NBA, and why can't that be established?
Yeah, it's like a consequence-free environment for a lot of guys right now in the NBA, because I mean, you get a guy like Kevin Garnett getting on all fours, you know, barking at Jared Bates. That happens. Sometimes in life, you need to get checked. I mean, that's just the way it
is. Absolutely.
And, you know, you can't do it in the NBA anymore, which, you know, I mean, in some respects, I guess it's good that, you know, there's not brawls and so on and so forth. But the reason there are brawls is because you get so much of this pent-up frustration that you can't do anything about, and then it all comes out at once, rather than letting small little, you know, pressure valves out here and there, letting guys get it out, and not having to worry about getting fined or losing $100,000 worth of salary because, you know, you got to sit out 7 games.
You know what? See, people wonder why I'm a hockey fan. They're the only sport that has it right. You really can isolate. If some guy's messing, okay, let's go. 5 minutes, you fight, it's over with. Nobody ever really gets hurt, and you go to the penalty box, and it's over. We have Frank Bukowski on Talking Ball all the time. Ex-NBA player, 13 years in the NBA. He was kind of an enforcer. And Frank will tell you, he's now working as a union rep.
Yeah.
He works for the union. Frank will tell you, let the players police the game. Stay out of it. The league will, all the league does is mess it all up. Let the players handle these things, and the league will be much better. Now, I don't want to go back to the days where Maurice Lucas used to joke about, well, yeah, we go and hit the guy, it's only $50. You know, in those days, it was $50. You hit a guy, it was $50. Well, no, that's not right either. But there's got to be a way for the players to handle these things. There is in baseball. You pointed it out, Dave. It happens in the NFL, too. That's why guys don't cheap shot all that much in the NFL, because you know eventually you're going to pay for it.
You don't
pay for anything in the NBA. You don't.
No. Hey, you got Carlos Boozer last night, you know, hitting Nick Batum right across the shoulder. That's part of the game. I believe that's legit. But you got to allow some retaliation there. You
exactly.
know, if people want to say that's enough and this team wants to nut up and say, you're not doing this to us anymore, it shouldn't be the end of the world. And this is part of exactly what the Blazers need to do. I mean, the Blazers, despite what they should have learned in playoff game number one last season versus Houston, a lot of the Blazers are still coming to work in essence with a suit and a briefcase. And they got to get rid of that. And they got to get down and dirty if they want to go anywhere in this league.
That's what I wanted to ask you guys, though. If that kind of thing were allowed, if this whole retaliation thing, police the game, if that were allowed, what kind of position is your Trailblazer team in? Can they play that game? Do they have somebody on their team who can take care of that? And don't say Jeff Pennegraff, because, you know, he's a rookie, not even fair, and he's not going to play enough. Can they handle themselves in that environment, or are they going to be the guys that are pushed around?
Well, this is right. Joel Prisbilla would get a huge contract.
Get that brace off his knee. I mean, Joel's shown a willingness to do that now. You know, I mean, he's not afraid.
He stands up to Shaq.
Yeah. I mean, and him and Tyson Chandler. I mean, every time Tyson Chandler comes to town, I mean, someone's getting thrown out of the game. You know, so I mean, a guy like Joel, yes, I could see it.
You know,
other than that,
what disturbs me about it is we've seen Juwan Howard, we saw Jamal McGuire, we saw Jarrett Jack. Two of those guys are gone. One's not long, just for his age, you know. Where are the homegrown going to be around here for a while Blazers who will be that Jerome Kersey? you know, who will do that. And I'm not seeing many outside of Prisbilla. And frankly, I'm not sure it can really even be a big guy because your seven-footer is pretty obvious and slow.
Well, Antonio Harvey tells me that Steve Blake may be the toughest guy on the team.
Yeah, yeah,
he
exactly.
is a tough guy.
Yeah, well, he was staring down Dwight Howard against Orlando. That was pretty sweet.
But, you know, Dave, my point at that, and I watched that, and it was right at the end of a half, and he was right in Dwight Howard's grill. And I told the guy next to me, I said, you know what, if I were Steve Blake, I would call Dwight Howard every name in the book, and I would challenge him to fight me right there. Because the way the league is right now, you can say whatever you want to say. Yeah. What's that guy going to do? He's not going to hit you.
Yeah.
There is no way he can't do a thing. So you might as well become what the whole league has become, and that is a bunch of posers.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of posers. They all act tough. But they never have to prove it, so what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Carmelo Anthony.
That's the same. There's a lot of, yeah. fake
There's
tough guys.
There's a bunch
guys.
Of those guys.
Fake tough guys.
Yeah, yeah. Fake tough guys. Good call.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, I guess that it is what it is. And I can't imagine ever going back to you know, allowing guys to settle it on the floor. But
David Stern's not going to allow that.
Well, and it, like in the, you know, as, you know, we kind of got into it. We didn't get into it. But, you know, we were talking about the foul on Rudy with Marcus Thornton.
Right.
And, I mean, I think what happened with that play was that Chris Paul was throwing a lot of elbows in that game. And, you know, they're probably not going to call a technical on Chris Paul, but you call a technical on Marcus Thornton, you know.
Yeah.
He's a rookie, you know, second-round pick. So, I mean, that seems like, you know, it's like they say about the NCAA, you know, they got so upset at USC that they gave, you know, North Texas State a five-year suspension.
That's,
you know? That's kind of the way it feels like in the NBA sometimes.
They're so upset with USC football that they put their basketball. They're going to put their basketball team on probation.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I mean, you never know. So, kind of looking forward here. The game's coming up. Blazers have the old Texas two-step, as they call it. There's three teams there, but we're going to play two of them. Like we kind of talked about at the very beginning, kind of really crucial, difficult stretch here at Houston, at Dallas, home for Charlotte, at Utah. Home for San Antonio, home for Lakers, home for Oklahoma City. Those right there, those are all probably playoff teams. Maybe one of those teams drops off. All of them are Western Conference teams, except for Charlotte, a Western Conference team? I don't remember.
The Bobcats?
Yeah, the Bobcats.
No, that's as far on the East Coast as you can get.
Well, Memphis is all the way over there, too, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's
good point.
New Orleans.
The Grizzlies throw me off. And New Orleans, yeah, exactly. Those teams are always the ones that kind of screwed up my head. But all those teams, except for Charlotte, Western Conference teams, all of them contenders. What do you guys see now this next stretch here?
Well, I don't like the looks of it. And, you know, and I've always been upset. Houston is a team talent-wise that the Blazers, even injured, ought to be able to play with.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at a lot of players who are really not extremely talented. They just play hard. But they're always so well-prepared, especially for the Blazers. Elston Turner, who does the defense for Rick Adelman, really knows how to lock in on you. And I, you know, because they played the Blazers in the playoff last year, they got a bigger book on them anyway. They just do a great – they kind of seem to have the Blazers' number to a degree. And on offense, they execute the way Utah does. And I would expect maybe the game will open the same way it's been opening, and that's with a lot of, you know, movement away from the ball and a lot of inside shots and dunks and everything. And then I think the Dallas game is – and look, I know this team's won a lot of games they're not supposed to win. The Dallas game looks like as close to unwinnable as you're going to get. Dallas is playing well now, and that's just a tough one.
And how does Houston do it? Just what we've been talking about. Shane Battier, great all-around player, never been the most talented guy, but he's big. He knows how to push you around on defense. They got forwards that get into LaMarcus Aldridge and upset him. And you've got our two main points there, Roy and Aldridge both getting, in essence, beaten down subtly, but it's still physical pushing around. And we can't cope. That's frustrating, but that's going to keep happening until this team grows up a little bit.
Yeah, and then you got immense speed on the perimeter with Aaron Brooks as well in Houston, and that's another thing that we don't seem to take care of business.
Don't sleep on the Bobcats.
No, not
I mean,
Bobcats
that's the Bobcats
great.
beat us more than they should. Gerald Wallace can become a nightmare. Yeah,
Larry Brown is really good in situations like that where he can scheme for somebody, and he'll defend you about as well as anybody, and they execute okay too. And he's doing a pretty good job with that team, I think.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's about time for him to move, isn't it?
It's getting along that time. Yes,
make the playoffs.
Been there 6 months. Yeah, San Antonio might be the most winnable game, and I mean Charlotte. Okay, yeah, but I mean. you know, I wouldn't be entirely surprised to see Charlotte beat us even at home. I mean, just because that team has a lot of athletes.
They did it last year.
Yep.
I mean, they did it again. They're better now.
San Antonio, I think, at least is a known quantity. Duncan has not been, is not Tim Duncan anymore. LaMarcus Aldridge seems to get up for those games. Maybe you have your best shot against them, but I wouldn't think it would be a stretch to say two wins in this next, you know, couple weeks would be doing fairly well.
Yeah,
that's not the optimistic note we've grown to expect from you, Dave.
Dave is always the realist, even in his optimism. Yeah, I look at this upcoming schedule, and you know, you got to throw everything you got at the Rockets and try to get that game, because you play in Dallas next night. Like you said, that game, you know, barring some kind of miracle game from Martell or Jared, really becomes almost unwinnable. So you got to give Houston everything you can.
But I thought that about the last two home games too. I mean, those are games you hate to see get away with the upcoming schedule.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those are games you needed to get.
Yeah.
Blazers did surprise us kind of in this last road trip, but certainly the one before when they made that East Coast swing. So, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, that they can do it again. But I agree with what you said at the beginning of the podcast. Feels like the miracle bag has been emptied. And you
does have that feeling, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, without Brandon, too. I mean, Brandon's the guy where you see him out there, and, you know, like Corey Maggette said, you know, if you got Brandon Roy in your game, you know, you've got a chance to win. Without Brandon,
you may not.
You may not. Yeah, exactly. You don't have. There's just not that guy who can go in and take over a game. And, you know, I mean, then that you would like to think they wouldn't have to get to that point where someone would have to take over, that it could be more of a collective team effort. But, you know, it's just not the way it is, I suppose.
No. Those late games are going to depend on his hamstring. I mean, if Brandon is back for the Lakers, I mean, that's always fun at home. And the team rises to that occasion. If you can meet Kobe's points with Brandon's points, you got a shot. Okay. Same kind of with Oklahoma City. You don't worry about Kevin Durant as much if you got Roy with the possibility of scoring, you know, 20 plus himself. Without him, even those may be too much firepower. I mean, the question of the day is when's Brandon going to be back? And so far, we don't really have an answer. No.
Yeah. I mean, at the very earliest, that game against Charlotte, and I would think that even that game is probably a stretch, since he's being reevaluated on Monday. I guess he could go, but usually, I mean, for most guys on the team, it's a rule you got to have one practice before you play. For Brandon, you know, those rules might not apply the same way. But coming off a hamstring injury that has been, you know, problematic, I don't know if you evaluate him on Monday and say you're playing that night either. So, I mean, Monday at the absolute earliest, then, I mean, I think probably more likely at Utah on Wednesday is probably the earliest chance you see Brandon. Even then, after what we got handled by Utah at home, do you risk playing Brandon at Utah, you know, knowing that it's just not that good of a matchup? So the other thing about that Laker game, too, I mean, if we don't have Brandon back for that Laker game, they smell blood in the water for sure.
Oh,
you know they're
man.
Sick of answering questions about why you can't win in Portland. And
oh, yeah.
If you don't have Brandon for that game, I mean, you might have Bynum and Gasol score 100 points together and have Kobe not even get off the bench in the third quarter. So, I mean, if you're religious folks out there, if you've got some kind of, you know, some kind of secret healing powers, you know, and if you want to waste it on a basketball team, you know, please throw them our way, because we could use that hamstring getting better. I think I pretty much got off everything I needed to say. You guys have any parting remarks?
No, it's been a pleasure being on with you guys. I always like to get together with Dave when he's in town. And Casey, this has been a pleasure for me. I listen to the podcast, and actually be on, it's a real pleasure.
I appreciate that. It's very nice to have you in, Dwight. It's very kind of you to say.
I enjoyed it.
Dave? Yeah, Dwight brings a certain je ne sais quoi to the
experience. Yeah, I know. He's sitting here. He's in his chair.
Now you're going ahead and you're comparing me to Nick Batum when you start talking.
So, yeah.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, the Dynamic is very nice. So thank you for coming in. We appreciate
Loved it.
Loved
it.
Absolutely. So that's going to wrap it up for us. For myself, for Dwight James, DwightJames.com, morning sports page, talking ball after every game on Comcast.
Also on the street corner, if you want to listen to him by the Rose Garden.
That's right.
At the Mac station, calling out in that microphone.
I'll talk with anybody. I'm easy and I'm cheap.
Absolutely. For
that's the kind of people I used to date before I was married.
So. Oh.
Yeah, where's the rim shot?
Did Dave say that?
Yeah. No. Speaking of which, too, you said I was going to meet your wife. And
well, you
was
didn't,
she here
didn't
last
show
night?
Up at the game. Yeah, she was at the game
I was
last
at the
night.
Game. You know where I'm sitting.
Yeah, well, Ben met her. He was looking at her at the corner of his eye, too, jerk.
Yeah.
Wow. Was
I could cut his salary.
Rascal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole for you folks out there, Dave used the whole "you will get to meet my wife" as a precursor for me getting him tickets last night. Not that he wouldn't have got tickets anyways, but he said, you know, you can meet my wife and see, you know, where the attractiveness of my son comes from. And I was like, well, that's great. And then lo and behold, I'm here this morning and Miss Deckard. So
yeah, Casey's argument is your kid's incredibly cute and you're a schlub, so your wife must be super hot.
That sounds logical to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
I'm sure she would agree that she's the hotter of the two of us.
Well, I'll have to go put in a Google search or something like that, see if any photos pop up.
Careful who you Google nowadays around.
Keep it clean, everybody. Keep it clean. So
didn't say a word.
So for myself, for Dwight, for Dave, we appreciate you guys listening. Send us your feedback to I don't know, Dave or myself or DwightJames.com.
I'll take it.
I don't even know what my email address is anymore. So we'll do it again next week, everybody. Take care.